Welcome to Geeks Explicitly. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Geeks Explicitly is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to talk about all aspects of geek life. You name it, we cover it. This is episode 51, Tristan Tarwater, fantasy author. I am delighted to say that this is going to be a break from our usual top five style episode. If you're a new listener, you have no idea what I'm talking about. So usually we do shows that are like a list of top five things and I'll count down or things like that. Longtime listeners, you know what I'm talking about. But this is going to be a little different because we have a special guest. I am delighted to say that the one and only Tristan Tarwater is here with us because she has this awesome Kickstarter for her debut graphic novel, Shamsi, A Fistful of Lunars. So we're going to be talking about that and what it's like to do a Kickstarter and write cool novels and graphic novels and all that kind of stuff. So let's welcome to the show, Tristan. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I'm so excited that you were like, yeah, I'll come on your show.
Oh, totally. I mean, we're kind of like co-workers. We both roll for a Troll in the Corner. So it's like, oh, sweet, you know? So that's nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a blast. The other day, I was looking on there, and I was talking to Ben. Ben Gerber, for people who don't know, he's the head of Troll in the Corner. He's been pestering me because every year he does the Extra Life 24-hour Gamerthon, and I do it too. And he's like, you got to get on this. You got to do it. And I realized it's like the fourth or fifth year that I've been doing it with him. And I'm like, really? I've known you that long? It's just weird.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think I first started writing for Ben when I did Reality Makes the Best Fantasy when I lived in California, which seems like eons ago. Because since then, we've moved back to Portland and had a lot of things happen. So, yeah, I've known Ben for a long time. And remember all his Wayne Foundation benefits and stuff like that, which are really awesome. So
yeah, that's it. And I always enjoyed reading your articles. It was one of the highlights for me. Because Troll in the Corner does a lot of like RPG-y kind of things, which I find interesting, but not the type of games I play, so they never really apply to me, but your stuff just kind of gripped me. It was very accessible and interesting, funny, and everything, so like I would look forward to it coming out, and that's one of the things I noticed with this graphic novel you have going. You have that same essence of humor, but you're able to dive into like what makes characters work and like who they are as people or other sorts of entities. So why don't you talk about this? First of all, it's called Shamsi, A Fistful of Lunars, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so I'm sure people are like, oh, let's talk about the plot. But for me, anything begins with the title. Where did you come up with this title?
The name comes from, it went through a few iterations, the title. The first one was The Misadventures of Streetsman Shamsi, A Fistful of Lunars, and good luck fitting that like on the cover of anything or the spine. And so we pared it down to just Shamsi, A Fistful of Lunars. And it's a reference to, you know, the movie A Fistful of Dollars, though it's not a Western. It's a light fantasy graphic novel about just a character who is trying to get some money, basically. And Shamsi is a character who's in my fantasy series, who is this kind of lovable idiot, I suppose. The Valley of Ten Crescents about thieves who like know what they're doing, like they're on top of their game, and Shamsi's just like the dude on the corner, like the walnut game, just like, all right, where's the pee, where's the pee, where's the pee? And once he's gotten $10, he like flips the table and goes running down the street.
That's a clear picture of what he's like as a person.
That's like a very good example of like who this person is. And so I've been wanting to do a graphic novel for a long time because I do like comics like a great deal. I read a lot of comics nowadays, a lot more than prose. And as I was kind of batting ideas around, the Shamsi thing kind of stuck with me, partially because my husband is like, I think the whole novel series is about Shamsi. I'm like, that's not true. But He's just a fun character to write, and his dialogue is really funny. And since graphic novels, at least from the writing standpoint, they tend to be really dialogue driven, just writing funny stuff that he does and things and bad situations that he gets into is just cool to do. So yeah, I think I answered your question.
So clearly your background is from that of an author, but a graphic novel has to blend the writing with the visual arts. And some would say the visual at least is what your first impression is going to go for. So yeah. Like, how did that work for you to be like, oh, here's what I'm going to come up with, plot and character development and everything. But like, now I need art for it.
Yeah, I'm working with this really great illustrator, Adrian Ricker. He's a friend of ours. We know him. It's kind of a weird story. We know him from when we used to be property managers. My husband was the head property manager, and I was the assistant. And him and his partner lived at the apartment complex, so that's how we kind of became aware of him as a human being. And then when we moved back to Portland, we saw him at Stumptown Comics Fest. And because I'm always looking at people's art, like my Tumblr is just everyone that I think makes amazing stuff, and then terrible gift sets, of course, but a lot of just like really cool art, and I'm really into art. And so when I saw his Tumblr, I just really liked his style. I thought it'd be a really good fit. Adrian's really good at drawing people. He's really good at drawing backgrounds, which is important. But he's also really good at world building visually. So I thought he'd be a good fit. And so when I asked him, he said that he would do it. And so when you write for an artist, you write the dialogue, but you also have to give them a lot of just like references and stuff like that. So I just spent a lot of time on Google image search, trying to find, you know, pictures of people, of places, videos of characters that I thought kind of implied what this person is like, just to kind of give him enough to work with to then translate it onto the page and get the action and the feeling right. And Adrian has a lot of background in just visual storytelling. He's worked on a few comics before and studied art. And so he's very good at sequential art. And he did a really good, I think he did a really good job. Like, I tell him this all the time. And he, you know, I hope he takes it to heart, you know. But I thought he did a really good job of just telling this, having the script is funny. Like, I read it and I'm still like, huh, that's a really funny joke. But visually it's very funny. You know, there's some visual gags that are in there that Adrian just, you know, nailed, which was really good. So, yeah.
Well, I've been a fan of his for a while, and I was really surprised when I saw his name attached to this project, because ages ago, I came across some art, I think in one of your articles, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. Who did this, and how can I get stuff like it? So I ended up talking with him. I saw two pieces I really liked. At the time, my wife and I had bought our first house, and I think I've talked about it a little bit on this show, but if not, I've talked about it on my other show, War Gaming Recon. And so it has a finished basement, needs to be redone. I mean, it's wood paneling and, well, and just like all sorts of stuff. But yeah, it's kind of dark. It has really cool exposed beams, not a whole lot of light. I need to put a car. People don't care about my decorate. But anyway, one of the things was I wanted to make it like a cool space to kind of hang out. So we got a TV down there. I'm into fish keeping, so we have an aquarium. Nice. And it's where I game. So I made this really cheap 6x4, 6x4 foot table, but I was like, the walls are just wood. I need stuff on them, because like, if I don't have light, at least I can have something cool to look at. And so he had two pieces that I fell in love with. One was this mech, and I love like anime and Neon Genesis Evangelion's a huge thing for me, and like Robotech and Macross and all that kind of stuff. And there's this mech, and it made me think of Macross. But what really came across to me in that piece was the feeling and emotion in it. It's very dark, but it speaks just through its use of light and colors. So I was like, this is just, it's deep. And I'm like, I need this on my wall. And then there was another one, which I was like, oh, I don't know if I should put up, because it's a little like seductive almost. I'm like, is that appropriate? Like, because people are going to come down. What are they going to think? So it's this mech pilot. And
oh, with her hair up.
Yeah, she's getting out of this mech suit. Mm-hmm. And she's all like, she's sexy. And I'm like, whoa, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Look at, she's a cartoon, but like, she's hot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. And then I was like, well, maybe it's fine. So like, I ran it by my wife, which is funny because my wife is a redhead. I was like, so what do you think about this? Do you think it's appropriate to be? Yeah. And I'm all like worried about stuff. Anyway, so I talked to him and I was like, how much do you want? And this is a size I think I can get a frame for it. Well, lo and behold, he sends like this extra fast care package with the two prints I wanted. It was super affordable. And then he sent them in like two or three other sizes just in case it was something else that he I could use better to find a better frame. He signed them all. I mean, he was fantastic to deal with just as a customer.
Nice.
And I would so just get stuff from him anytime. So when I saw that he illustrated your book, I was like, whoa, this is like even cooler than what I thought it was going to be. So between that and then I like how you're releasing a strip as a webcomic. What is it? One a week for a year, right?
Yeah.
And so I read some of it and I was like, this is really funny. And the art goes, like you said, like the art goes really well with it. Cause like for people who haven't seen it yet, first of all, you need to, but like when it starts off, the main character, he's like you said, he's like, I'm broke and I need to do stuff. And lo and behold, it turns out there's this gangster who's involved. Who's like, dude, you owe me money. He's like, okay, in a few days, I'll give you your money. He's like, fuck that. I need it in hours. So you better give it to me. And he's like, what the hell am I going to do? And that's where I left off. But like, you see me, he has like his hands in his pockets and he's all like, I'm going to slouch and be like, I don't know what to do. How the hell am I going to do? And there's this dog. You know, like there's like that little postscript. It's like a dog loves him and gives him kisses and stuff, but he's really mean on the jaw.
Yeah.
That gripped me.
Mm-hmm. Good. I'm really glad that you think that it's funny and you're getting like all that from that. Like I said, like Adrian's, I'm not surprised to hear that he did that because Adrian's really awesome just like as a human. You know, but yeah, I'm glad that it seemed like you like read the bios and stuff and you know the dog's hands and faces,
which
is because I mean you could read the bio but they obviously are very menacing to Shamsie. I kind of feel Shamsie just feel threatened not only by the blighter who's the main antagonist but these dogs that he has kind of at his beck and call. But they are really cute. I've known a lot of, they're pit bulls, obviously, but I've known a lot of just really good, adorable pit bull dogs, and they just really want to make their owners happy. And the blighter is their owner, and he's like, I need you to growl at this dude who owes me money. And they're like, okay. And he's like, I need you to, like, lay down on top of me, and, like, we could, like, cuddle and wrestle and stuff. And the dogs are like, that's the best. Let's do that, too, you know? The dogs do come back, and you get to see the blighter with his dogs. And there's a backstory with the blighter and his dogs, which we'll see if we ever get to that. But yeah, so I'm glad. I am releasing it as a weekly webcomic. There's one page a week. There's 105 pages, so unless something happens, it's 105 pages, no joke. It should take more than a year because it's coming out every Wednesday. We might do a few pages extra every once in a while, but there's also for holidays, it's kind of a rule of thumb you don't post because people are so busy they don't catch it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're going to miss it and be like, oh crap, I missed that.
What happened? You know, so it's nice for people that like weekly comics. They can read it every week, but people who are really impatient and just want to know like what happens, that's what the Kickstarter is kind of for. You can get the whole 105 page graphic novel, both print and digital, and just see if Shamsie figures it out and what happens and who else winds up becoming a player in this game of him trying to just get this cash. So, yeah.
So let's talk about the project itself and why people need to give you money. It's a great project, and if it wasn't, you wouldn't be on. Because I have this rule of thumb. I don't care who a person is or how important or powerful, whatever the thing is, if I don't like them or what they're doing, they don't come on any of my shows. And that's just because I don't want to be like, this is awesome, and then when I get off the show, they're like, dude, that sucked. Yeah. I'm just like, I'm being a whore for someone to go, that's not who I am. Oh. So, like, it really, first of all, everyone needs to know that you did meet your goal, but they still need to give you money because this really cool stretch goals. One of the things I liked was your goal was only $2,000, and I think that is super reasonable for to get a graphic novel published. I've never had to deal with any of that kind of stuff, but I'm a huge fan of comics and graphic novels, and I work in a library, so I deal a lot with this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, I was really intrigued. Like, you have, as of the time that we're recording this, which is August 13th, you have 67 backers, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
17 days to go, and you've raised over $2,700.
Yeah. That's awesome for me. It's kind of, I mean, it's really good. We've run Kickstarters before for novels, for two of my books, and none of them funded this quickly. But I think without running those first two and having the novels, I have a lot of kind of spillover of fans who really like the Valley of St. Crescens. It's just like, it's another story, different medium, but it's still in St. Crescens. And so I had a lot of people just say, oh, wait, a comic? That's awesome. Which is really good that they won't trust me with a comic script, you know, to get it done. And it was awesome that it backed so quickly because it kind of showed just, I mean, we had a lot of people that we knew back it, and they all just really wanted to, they wanted it to happen. Another cool thing that we offered this time was we offered people a chance to be drawn into the graphic novel, which you can kind of do in books. I forget, there's a term for it, where you just take someone's name and you just kind of make it fit in with your world and you write them in. But now, it's this graphic novel, we can just, like, draw you in. So I was like, everyone should know that there are some, like, adult situations in this graphic novel. But, like, if you don't want to be in one of those situations, like, please, like, let me know. Like, I want you to enjoy seeing yourself in the next comic. You know, and it's good because we're also, not only are we doing it for the comic, we're also being able to share, like, my books are in some of the reward tiers. Adrian's other comics and his art is also in the reward tiers. And the money goes towards obviously fulfilling people's rewards, getting them the comic, kind of as a pre-order. Kickstarter is not supposed to be, it's not for pre-orders, but a lot of people who write books use it in that way. It's for people to get their books. It's also for me and Adrian to have books at Rose City Comic Con, where he has a table, which is a big Comic Con here in Portland, and Geek Girl Con, which I go to every year in Seattle. And then the rest of the money goes to pretty much paying us for all the work that we put in, because it was a lot of work, because we waited till it was done to run the Kickstarter. We basically put in all the work without getting paid, and we haven't done anything on the site yet to generate like ad revenue yet. And we don't want to put a bunch of ads up because that is not something people who read web comics, you don't want to see a bunch of ads blinking and flashing everywhere. So the money is just to pay us for all the hard work. Mostly Adrian, to be totally honest. Like, I obviously worked and I'm putting in a lot of work trying to get the news out there. But I can't even, it takes hours to do a single comic page. Like, and he has a day job that he does, you know, and he works on this comic. And of course we both like love what we do, but that doesn't mean that because we enjoy the final project of what we did, that we don't want to get paid for it. Cause we still have bills, you know what I mean? So that's what that money is going towards, and the stretch goals and things like that, and just to make the book cool, you know. We really want to do a paper doll. I think that'd be really fun to have. So yeah.
Well, let's talk about the different levels of backing, because I know when I haven't backed a lot of Kickstarters, but when I look at a Kickstarter, I really look at what the different monetary levels are, and then what you get at that, And I did a whole episode of another show about, like, what is Kickstarter, and I think there's really a disconnect between how content creators view it and how people who back it use it view it. I think backers view it as a store, and content creators use it as a way to create something cool, whether it's a graphic novel or some piece of tech or something, but as a source of money, so they don't have to sell their soul to like an angel investor or anything like that. But like a backer is going to look and say, so if I give you $40, what do I get for my $40? What am I buying for?
And
I think that's faulty, but I think that exists. So like, what do people buy, air quote, at their different backing levels?
Yeah. So at $10, you get the digital comic. It's a copy. It's DRM free, which means you get the file. You like you download it. You put on whatever device you want, and you can share it with your friends just like you would a print book. Like that just seems like you should be able to do that. And it comes as a PDF, a CBR, or a CBZ. Generally, we usually say if there's some weird format that you need it in, let us know, because Chris, who's my spouse slash tech guy, he's generally up for a challenge. You know what I mean?
So basically, it'll run on any computer. It'll run on an iPad, Apple device, Android device.
Right.
Nook, I've read it on Kindle, my phone. Any of that kind of stuff, right?
Exactly. Even though Kindle might be kind of weird just because if you have like a black and white, it's a color comic. But there's a lot of comic apps that you can use. We just had an update where we said, here's some comic apps that you can download to read the comic.
And
we also said, if you know of one that you like better, then let us know and we'll let other people know. Because we want you to be able to access it. I mean, having media available is really important to us. That's why we also release all of our books Creative Commons, again, to kind of increase that accessibility and let people just do what they want with the media that they enjoy. But that's something that's like a different topic kind of. But that's what you get for $10. You get the digital comic.
That's awesome, though. That's a great deal.
And it's 105 pages, you know, so that's a lot of reading.
That is. So what's the next level up for back?
25. We did a early bird 20. Now it's a $25 tier, which got you the print book and the digital comic. So you get the print book, which is, you know, it's comic size. It's like 10.25 by 6.625. And just not that I've looked at those parameters a million times on the internet. And you get the download. So we'll get access to the download link that we'll send to everybody, because every backer gets a download. And there also will be a QR code in it. So if you're reading it, and if you're like, someone's like, hey, that looks cool. What is it? Oh, do you want to read it? Here, get your phone, zap it, and you can have it. Like, that's what you could do, you know, if you wanted to. So that's what you get for $25 currently. $50.
Wait. So just back it up for a sec. Basically, if you were to buy the print book, if you were to back it at $25, you're paying $15 for a physical comic because you get in the digital for $10, right? A normal graphic novel is $18 to $25 in the store. So really, you're getting a graphic novel for a hell of a deal for print format for basically $15.
It's a good price because you get the print and the digital. And when we do print in general, we try to offer the digital. When I go to cons and I sell books, if you buy a print book, I give you a QR code card that you can use. Because if you want to read the book, like if you want to read it while you're in the, you know, in the bathtub, or if you want to read it while you're on the train, like you should be able to read it however you want. That's just how I see it.
That's really cool.
I think it's cool. Like, I wish I have backups for everything. It's a good way to have a backup, and it makes it easier to share stuff. I mean, there's a lot of times where, like, I've had a book and I've just physically, like, given it to someone and then you never get it back. But I'm like, hey, do you got your phone? And then you get to keep your copy. You know, if you want to save it to your hard drive in case of something. So that's what you get for $25.
Okay. And so then you said there's a $50 level?
Yes. For the $50 level, you get the print book. You also get the digital book, and you also get a digital version of my novels that I've written and the comics that Adrian has written, as well as, oh, I forgot. Also, the other levels, you get access to some high-res wallpapers / prints of stuff that Adrian has drawn. So if you wanted to, you could take that down to your local photo center, bring it, and say, hey, I want this printed out, whatever size you want, so you could hang it up in your house. And it's a little bit of art of, you know, Shamsi, the goddess from the books, and some other ones that we're going to reveal what they are later, some funny stuff. And so, yeah, at the $50 level, you get everything from the previous plus the digital novels and the digital comics from Adrian. At the $100 level, you get everything from the $50 level and the physical books signed from us. So that's a lot of reading. and it's, again, it's print and digital. And those are limited just because that's a lot of stuff to ship out. And that's one thing you have to consider when you do a Kickstarter is, do I want to make everyone in the post office super angry when I come in with my 800 pounds of stuff? it makes it easier to plan for shipping costs too. And then at the $250, we had everything prior to that, plus you get to be drawn into the next comic, which we're planning to release next year.
Okay.
So that's what the tiers are. So yeah.
Now, when is the Kickstarter will end at some point to be successful?
Right.
When will people be getting their stuff? Let's say you're only getting digital stuff. When will you get your digital stuff?
What we would like to do is, as soon as the Kickstarter is over, like, we have the link now. Like, it's uploaded in the internet. We would like to do within 24 to 48 hours, which is like, here's the link, go get at it.
That's cool.
We're wondering if we should wait for the money to clear through Amazon first.
I would, just in case, because, I mean, you never know.
Yeah, which, like, you're like, well, like, those people will still, like, hang in there, you know what I mean? But I think people are charged right after the Kickstarter ends.
Yeah, as long as it is successful, which it will be,
we already know.
As soon as it ends, like Amazon, because it uses Amazon payments, Amazon will be like, zoink! I take that out of your bank account.
Right. So I would say we're probably gonna do within the first 3 days of the Kickstarter being over, all the digital rewards, the digital comic will be out. You'll have the whole thing. The goal for me personally is to have everything out by Rose City Comic Con, at least mailed out.
And when is that again?
September, I want to say 20th and 21st.
Okay, so end of September. That's not bad at all.
Yeah, just because, again, like, me and Chris, we work from home. We have a huge basement. We've fulfilled Kickstarter rewards before. And, you know, we're going to have all the packing stuff beforehand, so we can just put a book in, you know, print out everybody's names, get it on there, boom. And especially everything will definitely be up by Geek Girl Con, because I feel like people who backed should get their stuff before people would be able to just buy it. But that's me. That's kind of something I like, you know.
That makes me love you, because no, I'll tell you why. So I did for my other show, Wargaming Recon, I did a whole episode about Kickstarter, and basically, like, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And one of the things I talked about, there's this Robotech Kickstarter from Palladium Books, who I had never heard of beforehand, but there's this big uproar because there were issues, and it wasn't even funded, and then it did, and one thing after another. But the big problem was they were delayed in getting their stuff, physical product models and miniatures and all that kind of stuff, books and everything. It was delayed in getting, and they weren't going to send stuff out to backers just yet, not to everyone, but they were going to take product to Gen Con, because they said, as a company, and I can understand this, it makes sense, as a company, if they don't have stuff there at Gen Con, it hurts them long term, and therefore it hurts the game and any expansions and the support for the community. So that I get, but that meant there would be a delay in actual Kickstarter backers getting stuff. So Joe Schmo comes in off the street to go to fucking Gen Con, says, dude, that's cool, I want this. They give them the money, and they get the shit before someone who's ages ago was like, hey, here you go, and made it possible?
Yeah.
I take bullshit on that, okay?
I don't like that. That's like that's a big Kickstarter pet peeve of mine. Yeah, that was one thing that when we were talking about the Kickstarter and like the timing, I was like, we have to get all this stuff out before you can like pick it up. And like if people who like live in Portland or Seattle want to pick up the rewards at the con, like I'm totally cool with that. I think that's kind of fun and it saved me on shipping. So
well, so yeah, you can meet the creator and you can make a chat with you at the con for a couple moments and say hi and be like, you're awesome. Thanks for your stuff.
But I've definitely backed Kickstarters and then gone to conventions and be like, oh, I totally backed that. I totally haven't gotten mine yet. That's super whack, you know? And then I've also backed Kickstarters and then gotten my thing. I backed Kickstarters, seen the thing at the con, and bought it to be like, oh, I'll have two. And then I get it, and I'm like, this is whack.
I backed this? Why would I do that?
Yeah, I was like, oh, man, like, want one. I have two of these, and I'm not going to name names, but that's definitely a thing that has happened to me.
eBay will be your friend, or Craigslist.
I don't even think I could get rid of it there.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's not your fault.
I feel bad, though, that you had this negative Kickstarter experience.
Whatever, but then I know better than to back anything by those people again. I've backed a lot of, I've backed movies and just not got them, or not got them the way that they said that they would. And I'm not going to name names, but there's movies where like they've been released in theaters and people can see it in the theater and I haven't gotten what they promised. I think that's super whack.
That's just shady.
It is really shady and it's really, but then you get back to, people are like, well, you didn't like back for a thing. You backed for an idea. I'm like, yeah, but you said I would get this thing. You know what I mean?
There's that agreement and there's trust involved.
Right. And if you would like, if you do your Kickstarter, like the reward should pay to like fund your idea and also get the person the thing that you said you would give them. And if you don't know how to provide that thing, like I would never say like, everyone's going to get, like, an action figure of Shamsie. I have no idea how to make an action figure. Mm-hmm. I would never offer that. Like, but I wouldn't offer it. So if you don't know how to do something, you shouldn't say you're going to offer it. Like, do your research. Like, there's no one standing right behind you, like, ready to shake you if you don't launch your Kickstarter right now, you know? Research is really important in any business venture, in any kind of thing where you're trying to raise money, you're trying to give somebody something cool and you want it to succeed. People generally have time, and we have a lot of people, especially people that plan on running Kickstarters, have the internet at their disposal where they can research things. And if they don't know, you can find out. You should never be too proud to be like, I have no idea how to ship things. Like, what do I do? Find out beforehand, crunch your numbers a million times and have someone else look at them before you go. Look at your profit margins, like plan those out super well and expect for something to get screwed up. Like you have to, something will get screwed up while your Kickstarter is running, while you're waiting for stuff to get fulfilled. Like it's just gonna happen. And you have to plan for that. And usually that means padding your expenses to recoup any kind of things that have to happen, you know. I mean, I have a lot of feelings about Kickstarter. I can sit here and probably talk about it with you for like an hour and a half, if not more. But like, needless to say, like we've been planning this Kickstarter for a very long time, you know. And I researched other Kickstarters. To see what they did, to see what they offered. The tiers went through a few iterations, you know, and Chris, who designed the Kickstarter, I mean, he was still designing that up until like the day before we hit go, you know. He put the images in. Later, at first it was just text and stuff. The video was like, oh my goodness, that was an adventure.
Let's talk about the video.
You know, one thing that's funny about the video is that when you have a Kickstarter dashboard, you can see like how many people watched the whole video. And like not everyone has watched it all the way to the end, which is kind of funny because Chris always puts a blooper at the end because there always is something really stupid that I do that he could just put at the end. So I'm kind of like, man, all those people missed out on me looking like a total fool. But we have a video, and I think I'm going to recommend, if you are the type of person who has problem even like looking into a camera or making eye contact with people, like consider a voiceover, like consider doing that. You can get free software to do those things. We use Audacity to record audio. It's pretty solid. It's not too complicated for a person such as myself to use. Take a few takes, but do that. I don't know what program Chris uses to make the videos, but they're not too complicated. He's not like a video editor. Like, he doesn't have a paper saying this is a job that he can do. But I think he did a good job. Like, I watch it and it's fun, and there's a lot of Creative Commons music that you can get for your stuff. There's a lot of free stuff out there that you can use.
I thought the video was really good because, like, it's crisp and clear, so you get the good quality to it.
Good.
And I think any successful Kickstarter that I've ever seen has some sort of good video or imagery in it. And I think people look for that. And they may not watch the whole thing, in which case they don't get to see you do a little chair dance. But I think just knowing that it's there makes people feel good about it. We were talking before we started recording this how I've had some problems myself doing introductions of my own show. And I might be recording one show and I do the intro for another. There was one time, it was absolute worst. I had a guest on. And that's when I try to make myself the best so I seem like I know what I'm doing. And they're not like, who is this moron I'm talking to? And luckily, it was this guy who's been on my show a bunch of times, on my other show, War Game and Recon. But I just kept on screwing up the intro. And I'd be like, hello, and welcome to... Oh, crap, I don't say that anymore. I'd be like, welcome to Geeks... Oh, wrong show. I screwed it up like a dozen times. And I've been doing this since 2006. Yeah. So, like, if someone's got the idea, I'm going to do a Kickstarter, and I've never been in front of the camera, or I've never recorded myself before, and then they get that, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. I mean, you can't beat yourself up if you don't talk into a camera regularly, and then you ruin it the first time you do. It's like, what did you think was going to happen? Well, we wound up... I wrote a script for the Kickstarter video, which neither one of us bothered to memorize. We just tried to hit all the points. And there were a lot of, and just lack of looking at the camera, a lot of this, a lot of just, like, fidgeting, which you saw.
Just looking away and stuff.
No, yeah, no, like, if I were
to... corner. Oh, that's... It's sunny out today. Did you notice that?
If you're a super... Like, I'm a very visual... I'm more of a visual person than an aural person. So if somebody's talking sometimes, like, all right, this is the situation. It's me and Adrian sitting there, and Chris hits record, and I say my bit, and then Adrian says his bit, but Chris starts walking away, so I'm like watching him leave.
That's awesome.
I'm like, wait, why am I watching Chris go? I should be looking at the camera, you know. That's
like,
not
engage the audience and be like, well, yes, what my compatriot's saying is very important.
Right. And then so we did like two takes, and we were like, yeah, like we did it, like we said everything that we had to say. And then Chris was like, I cannot work with this, like this is really bad. Y'all are fidgeting so much. Even like he took both of our audio and like cut it up and tried to put it over it, and he's like, no, I just need like one of you to say this. And since I'm the one that, you know, so I did it. And that he worked at, you know, thanks Kickstarters at the end. And like, this is a Kickstarter in the beginning. And then, I mean, because you get like that human element, like, oh, look, like these are actual humans who are running this Kickstarter. This is excellent. And then you show like the art and the story, because that's really what's important. I think if you see Adrian's art and just the storytelling that's there, if my voiceover as to what is happening and why you should back it, like you get the story. You don't need to see two Muppets flailing in my basement, which is basically what had happened. And you can laugh at us because that's totally what happened. Are you okay? Oh my god.
I've never heard of someone refer to themselves as a Muppet. That's...
no one can see this, that's but great. Like that's what's happened.
It's just like Beaker going me me me.
Yeah, that was us.
That's so good.
Yeah, that's
we had mentioned that your project's funded, which is wonderful.
Yeah,
but that people still need to give you money.
Yes,
because that'd it's be awesome. Cool. But part of the reason is you have these really cool stretch goals.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you talk about them a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. So
I
we
can
have,
get over about the whole Muppet thing.
The Muppet thing. So we have three stretch goals. The first stretch goal, which is the one we're heading towards now, is to improve the paper quality of the book. If you have ever been around paper, you know that not all paper is the same. So we're just going to improve the papers. I think it's going to go from 50 to 70 inside. And then the cover paper has a different like parameters, which I don't remember, unfortunately. But it just makes the paper a little bit heavier. It holds the ink a little bit better. There's less like see-through.
For people who aren't familiar with paperweight, what would that be like? What would they? What might they know? For example, like newspaper is really low quality paperweight. It's very, very light. Then you get like a mass market paper book. Is a little heavier, but still pretty light. And then you get, like, the Harry Potter books, for example, that has that really good heavy-duty paper.
Right. I want to say 70 is what a lot of graphic novels are printed on. And it's kind of hard, because not all graphic novels use the same. And some use 70 or 80.
But basically, like, if someone picked up, like, an X-Men book or a DC New 52 or something.
It's definitely not going to be, like, floppy comic quality to start off with.
Cool.
But it'll just be like a heavier graphic novel. Like if you picked up, I don't know if you read like Rat Queens, The Trade, it'll be like a trade
okay.
comic.
That's cool.
And it's just a little bit, it'll be trade paperweight no matter what. It'll just be kind of like a little bit heavier if we hit that stretch goal. The next one is if we hit $4,000 and that... is we will add some extra material to the book, which means there'll be the character bios will be there. There'll be more sketches, more concepts, a little bit more information about the characters in the book. And that stretch goal I like because it's both for the digital and the print comic. So everyone benefits from the stretch goal being from the Kickstarter hitting $4,000. Plus it's just fun to throw extra stuff in the back and that'll be about 10 to 15 pages back there.
Is that stuff you still need to finish fleshing out or is that like ready to just like shove in there as soon as that goal is met?
We have a lot of the sketches beforehand and we have the bios that are on the site and I'm always down to just writing a little bit more about everybody. Once we hit the 3,000 and we're heading towards the 4, I'll probably start working on it because you know what I mean. I have a lot of other work and we have some of it already there and so I might not start working on it until I know like okay this is a possibility I gotta get on this you know but it's Shamsi. It's not that hard to write and come up but then we do still have I've been posting them on my Facebook actually some of the preliminary sketches for the characters that we have that are really fun and that I Can't wait to get back to when we do more comics. And then the $5,000 stretch goal, which is kind of the most fun, is a paper doll where you would get a digital file, and we know where we can get it printed out in town of a paper doll of Shamsi, which is, you know, on not oak tag, but, you know, a heavyweight paper with Shamsi's image on it, and then two outfits that you can switch and dress him in. So you could see what he looks like in his underpants. And you can also dress him up, whether he's going to, you know, muck around on the streets or if he's going to go out to a nice place and try to steal some money from somebody.
So he actually will have underpants on, right? He's not going to just be in the nude or like a doll or anything?
Yeah, he's going to have underpants on because I would feel weird if he didn't have any private parts, I'll say, because that's just not, like, come on. And I guess, but then again, I don't know that he wears underpants, so it would still be kind of a lie. So I don't know. I don't want to have this X-rated.
I would feel weird opening up the book and be like, whoa, he's naked. There's his, what? But you're right. Like, he doesn't seem like the kind of person, one, who would be bothered with underpants or washing them and may not even have the money for such a thing.
Exactly. Plus, I don't know.
Like, fun, though. They could be all, like, ratty with holes in there and, like, patches and stuff.
Yeah. I don't think they'd be, like, when we think of, like, tidy whities. It's not going to be tidy whities. And it's not going to be boxers. I'll just think about what kind of underpants do people wear in the Valley of Ted Gressens? Or small clothes, as they say in a Song of Ice and Fire.
Maybe a loincloth or something.
Nah. I think it's just, like, tiny shorts or something that are, like, have been washed 8 million times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I have to put something there because I don't want it to be X-rated or anything like that.
For grown-ups only.
For grown-ups only. Well, it is. It's not a graphic novel that's geared towards children, which has my daughter kind of upset. She's like, "When are you gonna make something for kids?" And I'm like, "Later." Like,
no, but
you
still,
know.
Like someone who's in high school, like an older young adult, could, with parental permission, definitely enjoy it, whereas if they got paper doll with a naked guy in there, probably not.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. That kind of takes it to, like, all right, there's naked people. There's, like, full-on naked people in here. Like, there's definitely some – there's, like, a little bit of nudity. There's also, like, a weird thing about, like, what kind of nudity is the most adult. You know what I mean? Like, we could get into that whole conversation. Like, what is the, like, what makes something, like, X-rated, you know? And the comic is not X-rated. There's, like, adult situations, and not just, like, sex, but there's also, like, there's drug use in there. I guess I could say there's cursing, but it's, like, valley cursing, you know? So they're using, like, their curse words that they use. There's, like, ass. People say, like, oh, ass, you know?
Well, kind of like in Battlestar Galactica, they say frack, for example.
Right. Yeah.
Or
so, like
Star Wars, they call people a nerf herder, which is like a big insult.
Yeah. So like there's that, and you know there's blood in it. Like there's violence and stuff like that. It's just, I think also the idea of Shamsi in his underpants is kind of cute, so it kind of goes along with it, you know. So
you said humor too.
Yeah, like it's all like he's in his underpants. Ha ha ha. Underpants are always funny.
They are.
It is a comedy comic, you know, it's crime and comedy. It's kind of when I'm on Twitter and I'm like, I only have 140 characters. What do I say? I'm like, crime and comedy, use an ampersand to save like two characters, you know,
single space after the period and everything.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's been interesting. How many different ways can I plug this in 140 characters? Go, you know? So, but the funny thing about Kickstarter, about Twitter and trying to plug your Kickstarter is like, I think the last two times I've run a Kickstarter, I've been on Twitter like freaking out, like, oh my God, I've been talking about this like multiple times a day. Like everyone's going to like hate me, but like guarantee like the last 3 days, someone will be like, oh, you're running a Kickstarter. I'm like, are you kidding me? Oh my God. You know?
Where have you been?
Where have you been? Like, and it's just because the way social media is and the way the algorithms work on certain ones, like people don't see everything that you're saying.
No.
You know, and like, thank goodness for sometimes, But you have to do that because people aren't always watching. They don't always see what you say. And so, yeah, you will have someone on that last day be like, oh, this is the first time I've ever seen you talk about this. And I'm like, you should go to my profile and you should scroll down, because if I had a nickel for every time I tweeted about this, I'd punch myself in the face, you know? So, yeah.
I know exactly what you mean, because when I promote episodes of the show, I always come across, and I'll be like, oh, don't forget this, and I put something up, and then I try to remember to, pimp it again later on, and inevitably someone's like, oh, you do a show, do you?
Yeah!
I've been doing it since 06, people.
Yeah.
You know?
I just had someone yesterday. I was kind of freaking out about talking about it so much with other things that's been in the current events. You know, I've been like, oh, should I still talk about this? I'm like, I have to talk about this. I'm the only one talking about it. And someone was like, oh, you started doing your Kickstarter? I had no idea. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Because I have to also remember that not everyone is on Twitter and Facebook all the live long day, like myself, confession. You know what I mean? Like, some people, they go on after work. Some people go on only when they're at work. Some people go on not every day. And that's just not the case with me. So,
it's part of your job, though, because this is what you do for your professional career. You do this, you have your books and everything. So you have to promote yourself, because this is going to sound awful, but it's not like you're showing up in the New York Times book review, not because your story isn't worthwhile, but just because you're not put out by, Penguin Books or something.
Yeah, I mean, when you self-publish, the self in the self-publish is kind of a misnomer, because I work with a lot of people to put this stuff out myself, which I made air quotes, which won't come across in the recording. I work with a lot of people, but someone I don't work with is a promoter at the moment, and I do pretty well by myself. You can hire people to do that stuff for you, which if you have the budget for it and you suck at it, go do it. You know, there's a lot of people who are doing indie marketing right now that are starting up, especially for people who have smaller budgets and smaller projects in indie, stuff like that. So just you can Google them. It might come at a point where I might have somebody else do it. But at the same time, I just be on Twitter because I like talking to people. There's a lot of really rad people that I follow. There are a lot of other people doing comics that I think are stellar, a lot of cool writers, a lot of cool people from Portland, and obviously a lot of sweet gaming people, which is, goes without saying, even though I said it. So it goes with saying, I guess. But anyway.
I think it's neat, though, when you can connect with someone. Follow a few authors and filmmakers and stuff like that on Facebook. I use Facebook more than Twitter just because I find it more rewarding, even though Facebook's a pain in my ass. Mm-hmm. But, there's a New York Times bestselling author from my area who's on Facebook, and, he puts stuff up, and it's really neat. He lives in Boston, and I might comment, and then he happens to know my mom from some library stuff. So then, we'll talk on his Facebook. I'm like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then there's been times, say, I've tweeted Kevin Smith, and who's an idol of mine for various reasons, and he's, favorited my tweet or replied to me. I'm like, oh, what?
Oh, my God, I'm famous.
I know. That Weird Al song.
No, it's totally. I've had that happen a few times. I have had some friends who had, Neil Gaiman favorite their stuff, and they just, flip a table.
That's
not
cool.
And, understandably so, or, me erroneously, kind of ridiculously getting really excited when, a Freddie Mercury Twitter started following me, which I know it's not Freddie Mercury. I realize this. But even to have it say, Freddie Mercury is now following you, yes, I've done it, I've made it.
Your community, though.
Sasha Roes, who I really like, who was in Grimm, which is filmed here in Portland, talked to me. It is a joke, you know what I mean? But just to know, for 1 second, he's like, back that up, that's stupid. All time to them. I'm like, yes! Oh my gosh, Sasha Roes! I saw Pompeii, which is super sweet,
It's funny for me because I geek out when, someone who I admire mentions me, in, like, there's people who are not like New York Times bestselling authors or Hollywood whatevers who I just really get into. There's this author in the UK who I'm really into, and he's a magazine editor and stuff, and he's been on one of my shows numerous times, but whenever he mentions me, I'm like, whoa! But then it's weird because I'll go to a con, and there are people who listen to one of my shows, and they'll come up and they'll be like, I heard your show the other day. It was really good. I was like, wait, you heard my what? Because I just go and be like, I'm going to play some games and meet people and be cool. And like, the really celebrity people are there to be, and they're like, so what are you doing? You want to hang out? I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But like, it's cool and weird at the same time. But like, I love it. For me, doing this whole like podcast kind of thing, the best part of it is getting to meet the people who listen to the shows and like to see what they think about it. Not because like in a selfish kind of way, but just because to see like how they use it. And people are so busy, and knowing that people are taking the time to like read your book or back your Kickstarter or listen to your whatever online. Yeah. That says something. And so I'm always intrigued by like what made them do it and why they still like it, like what they liked and like how it influences them.
Yeah, no, totally. Like when I go to Geek Girl Con, I've gone 3 years now, and last year was the first year I didn't have the next novel. Just things happened. I had something else out. But I didn't have the third book in the series. And a few people, you know, they came up and someone was like, oh man, I came to get the next book in the series. Like, you don't have it. I'm like, oh, I'm the worst person on the planet right now. but it was like cool that, that they came looking for it. It was cool. They wound up winning like a t-shirt. We had done a raffle for a t-shirt and they said, oh yeah, I wear it to the gym. Like, people like asked me about it. I told them the story behind it, which the story is really funny. I'm not going to go into it right now. That's like a 5-minute thing. But it was cool. And like having people come over and be like, oh, like I bought the first book. You know, I want to buy the second one. You know, oh, I'm excited to like read this. When's the third one coming out? You know, and other people who say like, when I'm like, oh, thanks for like retweeting me. Or like, oh, like when you retweet my stuff, I think that's like amazing. Because like someone said like, oh, you're like a famous person to me. I'm like, what? You know, like.
It makes you feel good, right? But you feel a little weird about it too, I bet.
It makes me feel like someone, like I'm not just making this for like nothing. Like I made it for somebody, but I'm actually like I can put a face to that somebody who enjoys what I put out there. And that really means a lot, because that means I can keep on doing what I really love and enjoy. Like people are reading 10 Crescents, so I can keep writing in 10 Crescents and writing about all the stuff that happens there and all the ideas that when I'm in the shower, and I'm like, oh snap, wouldn't it be great if this happened? You know, like people appreciate that. And like, you know, also like they talk to each other sometimes and like they form like a little community of like people who think Tavra is funny or people who think Shamsi is ridiculous. You know what I mean? So that's, I mean, I used to make stuff just for myself to get out like teenage angst, you know, to work through stuff. And that stuff definitely has merit, but when you make stuff for other people, it's a totally different dynamic, and it's great having that connection with people, because especially for me, when I write fiction and I write characters, it is very character driven, and it is about a lot of like internal stuff, and knowing that people read it and appreciate it and can relate to it. I think the characters are great with all their flaws, because everyone in 10 Crescents is a mess. You know, I'll just flat out come out and say it. The fact that people dig that means like, you know, I did it, Babby. You know, it makes me feel good. And yeah, I really do appreciate it. Everyone like that, everyone whose name I recognize that back, I'm like, oh my god, you still believe in me. Like, I love you. And everyone that's new and taking a chance, I'm like, oh sweet. Like I will make you happy, I promise. You know? So there's that. And that's another reason why I still feel like you have to promote it, because even though we've made it, like, yeah, sure, the money goes to us, but the money goes to helping us make more cool stuff for everyone that likes it. You know, I kind of owe it to my fans already to enable myself to keep making them cool stuff.
I think you hit the nail on the head. That's what it's all about. It's about helping to bring joy to other people. People yeah. love what you do, and they want you to continue to do it, and you want to be able to continue to do it too.
Yeah, I definitely do.
So, I know the episode's winding down, but in addition to telling people to give you money and about all the cool backing levels and the stretch goals and stuff, how much time is left in the project? Because inevitably there's going to be a deadline, and someone doesn't want to be like, I'm going to give you money, but I'll do it tomorrow, and then tomorrow's too late. You know what I mean?
Right. The Kickstarter will end at around 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning on August 31st. It's a 30-day Kickstarter. We kicked it off the morning of August 1st. So you have until August 31st in the morning. So if it's like lunchtime on August 31st, too bad. Sorry. We will be selling it afterwards, but we're not going to start selling it until people get their stuff. Or if you come to the con and you can get it. But you should back, because then you're going to help get more cool things with it. And you'll get it first. I'm going to totally say be impatient and find out what the heck Shansi does. You know?
I think those are good reasons to go ahead and back it. I'm delighted to say that I am a backer of it. And
thank you, by the way, for that. I appreciate
it. Oh, you're welcome. I hope other people back it. And I should say, maybe I should have said in the beginning, of course, you and I have this connection through Trolling Corner. Mm-hmm. And I got a connection with your husband because he's responsible for the site redesigns for both of my podcast websites. Yep. That in no way was the reason why I backed her or why I'm telling anyone else to back. I'm telling you guys to back this because it's cool and I think it's worth the money and I think you're going to like it. So it wouldn't matter, Tristan, if you were like, here's $50 to say good things about it. Like, if I thought your thing was crap, I'd be like, how about we reschedule for never? He yeah, does exactly. not have you on.
No, I know. I appreciate that. Yeah.
You really do. So everyone, you know the deadline, August 31st, 2014, in the morning. So why not make things a little safer and do it a few days before that, like end of the work week of August 24th, like that week. Make sure you don't do it later than that. Get your stuff in, and $10 gets you the digital, or $25 gets you the print for $15 and the digital. I mean, that's a great deal. DRM free for the digital and stuff. So you get it. It's great. And yeah, I mean, some people don't have the money or whatever, and that's understandable. So they'll get a strip a week for the next 20 years of their life. Not really, but
not really. You'll get the one page a week, which each page is really cool. I mean, honestly. So yeah, you can do that, or you can tell your friend to back and then borrow it from them. There you go.
So for people who want to stay up to date, not just with this graphic novel, but with all the stuff you do and connect with you. You mentioned about being on social media often, or most of your daily life. How would people find you online? How would they stay connected to you and see all the cool stuff you're doing?
Yeah. If you are on Twitter, I am on Twitter when I am not asleep. And my Twitter handle is BackThatAlpha. That's BackThatElfup. That's me. I know it's really silly. Hopefully that'll help you remember it. And I'm on there, and I write about writing. I write about life. I retweet news and stuff like that, but I do update when I have a new thing out there. If you just want to come and talk or ask a question about Valley of 10 Crescents or any of my other work, I'm more than happy to answer those questions. And then I'm on Facebook. I have an author page there. If you look up my name, which is Tristan J, the letter J Tarwater, I should pop up. And over there, I pretty much talk about projects that I'm working on. I talk about other projects that I really dig. Like, I mean, there's so many cool people out there that are also making stuff. I can't help but talk about them sometimes. And so I'm on there. I post pictures. Sometimes I'll post teasers there. I usually cross post between Twitter and Facebook. So if you prefer one to the other, you can do that. I have a website that talks about how much progress I'm making on my 8 million things that I'm working on, which is backthatelfup.com. And if you just want to read the comic, then you can go to Shamsee, Shamsee, comic.com. And that's where we are posting the pages once every Wednesday, Webcomic Wednesday. And you can also see the bios for all the characters that are on there. We also have some fan art, which makes me so happy. I could like bite through my phone because it's super cool to get fan art. Oh my goodness. So yeah, shamseecomic.com is where you can just get the comic. And the comic is also on Comic Rocket. If you're the kind of person that likes to have all your web comics in one place, you can do that.
That's fantastic. And I know those are a lot of web addresses for everyone. So people don't need to worry, because if nothing else, just remember this one address, geeksexplicitly.com/GE51. That's geeksexplicitly.com/GE51. That'll bring you to the show notes for this episode. Will you be able to get a link to go to the Kickstarter project and back it and give lots of money to Tristan to make things happen and get to her Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff? And you'll also be able to get in touch with yours truly. You can send me feedback, questions, comments. I am, of course, on Facebook and on Twitter, all sorts of places. Look for Geeks Explicitly. All of that is in the show notes, geeksexplicitly.com/GE51. Tristan, it has been an absolute pleasure having you here on this episode of Geeks Explicitly.
Thank you. It's been super fun. I appreciate it.
It's a blast. I love when I can have someone come on, and you're just so passionate about what you do. It bubbles out of you.
Thank you.
It's wonderful.
Thanks, awesome. Thank you for saying that.
It's true. I mean, it's clear that you love what you do, and that not only do you love it, but that you're truly vested in creating something that has quality and value, not just for you, but for everyone who's going to experience it. And I think that's one of the reasons why that you've been so successful, because that pushes you, I would say, to do even better and better, and to make something that's going to touch someone and cause them to experience some sort of cool and wonderful emotions just by reading your books and coming across your graphic novel and all that kind of stuff. So I think people can tell that you're authentic and you're real and you're passionate is what it is.
Thank you. Awesome. I'm glad you said that, because I am. So,
yeah. Well, as everyone knows, another episode of Geeks Explicitly will be out next week. So until then, I hope you all take some time to check out the Shamsee, A Fistful of Luna's Kickstarter. And don't forget, you can always get back episodes of Geeks Explicitly by heading over to geeksexplicitly.com/archive. And then if you happen to listen to us on iTunes, and if you don't, I say please do, you can, of course, subscribe, which means you get all the episodes automatically when they come out. But then you can rate us and review us. Why would you want to do that, right? Well, you can rate us because it's cool. There's stars. You can click on stars. Who doesn't like to click on stars? And they get gold and shiny when you do. If you think it's great, you can go 5 stars. That's awesome. If you think we suck, you can do 0 stars. Hopefully you won't think that, but you might. But even more importantly, I hope you take the time to leave us an iTunes review. The reason why you're going to do that is iTunes is the number one way people find out about podcasts. If you went on iTunes and you're like, I want a podcast that's kind of cool, and you look and you see a couple podcasts, and one has all these really cool reviews on it and people saying great things about it, and the others don't, which one are you going to listen to? If it was me, I'd pick the one that said cool things about it. So if you leave us reviews, other people who might listen to the show will see that and think, maybe I'll take a chance on Geeks Explicitly. And what's even cooler, I will find out that you left a review, because I have those magical powers, and then I will thank you personally on air on an episode of Geeks Explicitly. And I'll say, for example, just to read a previous review that someone left, I might say, thank you, Pagan underscore Knight, for your 5-star review titled Great Podcast, where you said, quote, entertaining and informative podcast covering various topics of interest to geeks and gamers, including television, movies, games, local cons, events, etc. And I would say thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule and leaving that kind review. So if you want to be cool like Pagan Knight, I'd suggest you too leave a review on iTunes. And that's the way to get yourself mentioned in an episode of Geeks Explicitly. So once again, thank you everyone very much for taking the time to listen to this episode of Geeks Explicitly. And thank you yet again, Tristan, for not only being on the show, but sitting quietly and nicely while I do these intros and exit and all these little promos. Because I know it's dreadful for a guest to just sit there and be like, okay, dude, just get it over already.
You have to do this. What do you tell? You have to. It's only fine.
So thank you again, everyone. And don't forget, there'll be another episode of Geeks Explicitly next week.